I'd like to take this time just to tell you to eat my ass.
Killer, man. I'm excited because we don't ever talk about these two movies.
Me too, brother. I'm so excited I just can't hide it. But it's another day, another dollar, another cruel summer slashback. This is the unconventional episode, meaning these movies aren't normally classified as slashers, but they definitely have slasher elements. And they are two, I don't know, not really similar movies in that respect, but it'll be interesting to discuss these because I don't think either of these we've talked about in any real detail form at all.
No, I don't know. Like, Terminator's just one of those movies that feels like it's always been around. And to talk about it just before, like, seemed crazy.
It's like the Highwaymen. They've always been around and around and around.
But, like, it's just one of those movies where everybody knows it. Everybody's seen it. So, the first Power, not so much.
No, I don't think I'd seen the first Power up until I watched this. I watched it on streaming. Say that. So, I don't know how good my copy was. But I thought it looked very, very low budget. I don't know if it was or not. But
if there's a poll for this week, that's going to be fucking hilarious.
There is. Like, there is a poll.
God. And,
yeah, so if anybody wants to vote, which is the best of the two, as far as the slasher film goes, Terminator versus First Power, go ahead. And I think it's working this week. We had an issue with the poll last week and got everything uploaded and everything. And is Matthew Horror in here?
I haven't seen him yet.
Okay, we may wait until he gets here because we got a gift for him. We'll do a little bit of a roll call, though, before we get started. Antonis is in the house. SYC, Big Jim. Big Jim. A Matter of Pat. Ken Carlson. Justin Smith. The Mayor. The Macho Man has always been a part of the Dead Pit crew. What you talking about, pal? Adrian Smith, Mega Man MG, Black Peter. It's Uncle Bill's favorite. Weston Warner, Vanderhoff. So, yeah. Interesting show tonight. Looking forward to it. And we're not drawing a line in the sand. We're not making you guys pick sides. You know, you can go pro positivity, pro Dead Pits, or you can go in with the haters that and the drama. We're positively Pit, man. That's our new book. We're working on it right now. We stay positive here at Dead Pit.
I don't even know what to say about it anymore, other than to say that, like, there's an awful lot of people that, like, stir up shit and then, like, act like they're the victims and that they're the heroes and they're rescuing everybody from us. And I just like to say, you're really neither one of those things. You kind of just pieces of shit and, like,
thanks for the fucking drugs.
That's all I can really say about it. It seems like once about every 3 months, somebody comes along and they're like, oh, you guys suck, blah, blah, blah. Your opinions suck. You're dumb, big fucking hillbillies. Well, guess what, motherfucker? It's been 20 years.
Guess what, pal? Yeah. So. We're still talking the same shit we've always talked. If you don't like it, you can leave.
Yeah. You dumbass has probably been around for about 1 or 2 years.
Are we hypocrites, Uncle Bill? That's another thing. So are we hypocrites? Or can we we're going to do
a whole show on that. Don't worry.
We're going to do an expose on our history of being hypocritical, right?
I don't even want to go into it because we do have a lovely show today. But seriously, if you ever just like feel like you don't know what to do to boost your viewership or who to blame for your own stupid ass mistakes, by all means, choose us. And so we can drive more people to us and look like the biggest dumbasses of all time, please.
Yeah, you got to be hip with the Crips. Scratch Boy Nose got it.
Yeah.
Hip with the Crips.
I want to be positive. I want to tell them to positively go fuck themselves and just bear hug a dick.
With their mouth.
Right.
With their jowls. Although they're probably doing that anyway, to be honest. Let's not lie. It's a shame that Matthew Hara, I'm not seeing him in the chat. I was looking forward to giving him his gift live, but I want to go ahead and showcase it for you guys because shop.deadpit.com, this shirt arrived today. You guys can pre-order it and profess your hate for the burning and Cropsy. Check out this brand new shirt, boss.
God damn.
Now tell me that is not a sexy ass shirt right there.
Oh my God. There has to be.
Get a fuck Cropsy shirt right now on shop.deadpit.com.
There's got to be people out there that hate the burning, man. And that's the perfect shirt to express your hatred.
Yeah. You could wear it out. Wear it out to church.
Wear it out to church.
Carl, interesting you said that, buddy. Because that is actually exclusive to Dead Pit on Patreon.com. You can go over there and become a member if you want to pay to see it. If you want to live up to your word, baby, that's where it's at. Because the powers that be over at YouTube took that thing down a long time ago. But we don't get rid of anything. We keep it over on the Patreon page. So,
this says, Dead Pit is like Ric Flair. They've been around forever, but they don't fall over drunk in public. No, not anymore. Although that has happened in the past.
Right. Uncle Bill slept in a damn car for a day or so.
Dude, I've done that a couple different times where I just couldn't fucking get up or do anything.
Right.
And it got to the point where that's when I really knew I needed to stop drinking, like, because I could not recover for like a whole day. I couldn't do anything. I felt like I was going to throw up. I'm just like, I got to quit doing this.
I can't remember which show that was either, to be honest. I think that was towards the end of our run as, you know, convention vendor guys. I don't think we did it too much after that.
No. That shit. Like, looking back on that, I mean, that was fun and everything for the amount of time that we did it, but I, like, struggle to see how somebody keeps that up day after day, because that almost, like, just a couple times a year that we would do it about killed me there towards the end, and I was probably just in my 30, like mid-30s or something, early 30s, and felt like I was going to die.
No. I'm not really falling. Like, I don't really understand how there's a lot of money to be made vending at these conventions, really. I mean, even if you've got enough product there to move, what the table's usually, what, $200 or $300 for the weekend. And
yeah,
you've got to haul that shit in there and haul that shit back out and be around just sweaty, stinky asses the whole damn time. And it's just not that whole thing. I'm glad that we don't fool with that anymore.
I did wonder about that, though. Like, how those people make money? Because some of those shows, those tables are like $300. And I know that, like, a lot of those people that sell crafts and, like, trinkets and jewelry, there's no way they make that amount of money. Like, it's just not. I mean, you would get lucky to break even, and you probably lose money.
Right.
But I mean, I can see for some like the physical media people and stuff like all that stuff always makes money. Like it doesn't, you get for like shirts, physical media, and like figures, you can always make money at a convention. Like those guys always have a crowd. But to pay $300 and go down there and like sell you book or something that nobody's ever heard of, it must just be a passion kind of thing, because you're going to take a shit bath. There's no way you're not.
Yeah. I'm thinking the same way. I mean, I don't get the motivation there.
No.
Yeah, just search for Pet Cemetery and it should pop up, I think. Hillbilly Horror Theater, right?
Yep.
Enjoy. But I guess we can go ahead and get started. We're going to go chronologically here, Uncle Bill. So
you're going to do the Terminator first.
We're going to do the Terminator first. The Terminator from 1984 was the first big budget film James Cameron did. Of course, you know, if you want to go back and, you know, James Cameron, I think, was a truck driver that was inspired. One of the many film, future filmmakers is inspired by the first Star Wars movie. And he kind of wanted to get into film after that and got in with Roger Corman at a really young age and did a lot of like, was it sculpture building and sets and stuff like that and makeup effects and all this stuff. And the Piranha 2 technically was the first movie this guy did. But after that, it was this movie we're going to talk about, The Terminator from 1984. And I didn't know this up until I was doing some research on this movie, that James Cameron actually credited John Carpenter in the Halloween movie for his inspiration for The Terminator. Did you ever hear about that?
Yeah. Yeah, that is one thing that there's a lot of different versions of stuff on this too. I heard a version where he like says that he had like a fever dream where he kind of like had the idea and all the imagery and stuff for this, like when he was working on Piranha 2. Then there's the story about Carpenter. There's a lot of different like pieces and of it floating around.
I think he works with Carpenter before as well in like Escape from New York, if I'm not mistaken. So there's definitely some influence here from the horror genre, but this is a movie, The Terminator, which I've got the trailer ready, but it'll get flagged as soon as I try to play it. So we're probably not going to play the trailer because it's a little bit too mainstream, I guess, for us. But
see how we did that? We had enough sense not to do that.
The movie itself is almost an afterthought at this point, which is unfortunate. Like that series, I think it got overshadowed by the sequel for many, many, many years. And, you know, just more recently, probably in the last 10 to 15 years, people are starting to come back around to the original movie. Now, there are aspects of the original movie that have not aged so well. But to me, that adds to the charm of it, honestly. And I'm glad because James Cameron had a history of going back and fucking with stuff. Mm-hmm. Right. So who knows, you know, if they would have done that, that would have been bad. But do you remember, you know, before we get into the movie and talk about a little bit, the first time you saw the first Terminator movie?
Yeah, I do actually. It would have been, now that you mentioned it, it would have been with my dad. It would have been on VHS, and I can't remember if it was like a ripped VHS, like you used to like record over those VHS tapes and stuff like that, mm-hmm. or if it was like one that was actually from a video store. But I can remember watching it in his old house and like really, really liking it, but also being really, really afraid because I probably wasn't maybe like 6 or 7 years old. And the scene where like the endoskeleton and everything like makes its appearance and stuff like that, I was freaking the fuck out over that.
Some of those shots still look pretty good too, the way that they edited those together. And you know, Stan Winston's the one that created the damn, you know, the robot skeleton character, whatever they called it. Did they even call it the T-800 then or whatever it was?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, I didn't catch it if they did. I did watch the 4K for the first time. The 4K on this is great. If anybody out there doesn't have it, the transfer and everything on that looks phenomenal. My wife picked that up for me for Christmas, and I just never did open it or anything. But, all right, continuing on, we'll talk about the movie. It opens up, and I was sure to write this down because this is confusing as shit, the timeline of these movies. It opens in 2029 AD. There is a, you know, the entire Earth has been consumed by the machines, right? They're controlling everything. Mm-hmm. And there's this small underbelly of humans that have survived, right? It's led by, we later find out it's John Connor, and Kyle Reese is kind of like his cohort or whatever. We see a lot of laser beams and miniature models and stuff, and you can totally tell they're miniature models. But to me, I love that shit.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah. Like,
that's just not done anymore.
Any movie that has that in it, like, if it's done well, I automatically love. There's something about it. I prefer that 1,000 times over doing something CGI. Even if it, you know, in some parts you can kind of tell the way that it's done. Something, if there's some sort of like depth in that, that looks better than CGI to me.
And was it Brad Fidel that did the music in this? The music instantly gives the, and it's a low budget movie, instantly gives it more of the epic feel. Don't you think? Something simple like that makes the movie feel larger than what it really is.
I think one of the great parts about that score, though, is that he was smart enough to put that clanking kind of pop sound in there, which made it like very kind of industrial before that was really a thing. It's mostly drums, too, but there's that, you know, there's that sound in the background of it when those hit. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like a machine or something industrial. You can't really wrap your head around it. But the more it plays throughout the film, kind of the more that.
Yeah, this was the last time Cameron ever had a low budget in his career.
That makes sense.
But yeah, Arnold, we see him first, bare ass Arnold. And, you know, like I said, lots of, I don't know how they did the lightning bolts, and there's tons of that in this, like the lightning effects and everything. And they don't look horrible. It is what it is.
No.
You know, and so Arnold is, you know, making his way around Earth in 1984. He's traveled back in time, of course, and comes across Bill Paxton, who was one of the punk rockers in this, that he violently attacks and kills. And was Bill Paxton the one that he ripped their heart out or ripped their spine out?
No, that was Brian Thompson, where he like punches through him, I think.
Okay, so that's a total slasher move right there, right?
Yeah.
And they, you know, he steals one of the guy's clothes. I'm not sure whose clothes he got, but he's like, "Give me your clothes." And
my favorite line in this movie will be coming up later, but one of my favorite lines is like, I think it's Bill Paxton that's like, "Laundry day, nothing clean, right?" And he goes, "Nothing clean, right?" Or something like that. Just like repeats what he says.
Well, think of how ingenious it was too. So Arnold is, you know, it's got the accent, got the thick accent and everything, but it really works great for a robot, kind of. Like it, you know,
yeah, it's oddly enough,
it really does. Like it was a great choice there. And Arnold was already semi known for the Conan movies, or at least the first Conan movie, I think, was out, right? Maybe the second one was, I'm not sure.
I think he was actually working on, while they were filming Terminator, he was working on Conan at the same time, but I think Conan came out first. And it's a combination of those two movies that made him like a huge kind of star.
Mm-hmm.
And what people don't remember either, and I didn't know this until I was looking into it, he actually thought this movie was going to be fucking awful. And he talked a lot of shit about it. Like, when people would interview him about it while he was on the Conan set, he was like talking down about the Terminator, because he just thought it was going to be
another
cheap,
yeah,
sci-fi kind of, you know, crappy movie.
Now, when I first saw this movie, though, to my recollection, I was probably ten years old. And it was one of those rentals when I was a kid. And I can remember, even back at a young age, like, I don't know if I just didn't see a lot of sci-fi movies around this time period, but I just instantly thought of this as a horror movie. Like, that's when I was a kid, like, I was like, and it never really changed that much until that sequel came out. So I'm wondering, like, how did they label this movie in the video store? What section was it in? Because, like, it's really like a mixture of two genres. Like, there is sci-fi elements in it, but more or less it's like a stalking slash horror movie.
Well, to me, I always looked at it like sci-fi action. Like, I never ever saw it as like a horror film, I don't think. I mean, I guess if you look at it, if you want to look at it that way, you could see it as that for sure. The only difference to me is, like, he never really slashes anything. He just shoots the piss out of everybody. Like, there's no, to be a slasher, you need like a knife, or to me, I know that's not always the case, but like some sort of blunt instrument, not just guns. But it wouldn't make any sense for him, the Terminator, to be like running around fucking stabbing people when he could shoot people easier
with the Uzi 9mm.
Phase auto loaded in the 40-watt range.
But I was just saying, when I was thinking it, when I was going back at a young age, like, in my mind, to me, it was very similar to a lot of other stuff I was watching at the time. But also that night, Kyle Reese comes back, I guess, back from the future to stop the Terminator, right? The Terminator's mission ultimately is, without getting into, I mean, I don't know what else we'd get into on this, but the Terminator's mission is to go back and kill the mother of John Connor, right? He is the one that is leading the movement against the robots in 2029, and that's his sole mission. He will not stop until she is dead, right? And then they somehow get the intel to bring Kyle back as well to protect Sal Khanna.
Yeah, like the other side, the resistance or the rebellion or whatever you want to say, like, sends their own person back, which is Reese.
Who's actually been masturbating to her picture.
He fucking really has. Dorm. You know he has, too. The way that he goes off that fucking picture, he's like, take a picture.
I caress your picture. Every curve on your face.
Oh, God. Yeah, and then the rest of the film is just Schwarzenegger walking through all the scenes and shooting the piss out of everybody trying to get to her. It really, like, Schwarzenegger only has 17 lines of dialogue in this whole film. And it doesn't even seem like he has that much, but that's it. And somehow or another, everything about that performance works, from the way that he walks to the way how he talks to the way he carries himself to everything about it works. I've still not really figured out why that is. Probably because he was just a huge jacked up fucker that could barely move anyway, and like that helps when you're trying to play a robot. he just nutted me. We're about to make that meme killed me. But it made Linda Hamilton a star, and it made Schwarzenegger a star. It kind of made Michael Biehn a star, kind of. But at least he would work, you know.
Poor bastard had a cut scene in the sequel.
He would work with Cameron, so over time. So that helped his career.
Well, yeah, he had, wasn't he in Aliens?
Yeah. Yeah, he was in Aliens. He was in The Abyss. He was in a lot of stuff that Cameron did.
He did pretty good there for a while.
He was also in Tombstone. I don't think that had anything to do with Cameron, but it's a classic movie. So he had a lot of classic film roles.
What do you think of the, I guess, the love scene with Sarah Connor and Kyle Reese, and they start playing the piano version of the
yep.
the theme song.
I'm not sure that needed to be in there, but I mean, I guess it did to further the plot even, but like,
yeah.
I don't know, something about it's kind of goofy in the middle of all that shit going on.
Also, but. Like, there's a couple random things, like, there's a big explosion that singes the Terminator's eyebrows or something, right?
Yeah.
And I always was like, yeah. What the? That really doesn't do anything, really. To me, it's more distracting than anything else. Yeah. I don't understand why you would do that and at least just not have... You could have part of his face burn off or something, too, maybe. But
yeah.
Just the eyebrows, who cares?
No, Wes, I mean, I understand the idea that they had to have... That had to happen. I'm just saying, like, the way the scene is constructed itself is kind of odd in the middle of all that other shit. And the way they do it is kind of hilarious, too. But... And then he does go back to making pipe bombs. But, like, okay, so very first thing the Terminator does when he, like, gets down to Earth and he gets his clothes and he goes out and he gets his gun, he starts going through the phone book. People, I don't even think, would know what the fuck this is now, really, would they?
What's a phone book? Yeah.
Yeah, so he goes and scrolls everybody that's got the name Sarah Connor and then, like, goes to each one of their houses and kills them. And... I always thought that was just creepy as hell, too. He just busts down people's doors and shoots them. And he gets to her house. And there's a great sequence in there where he kills, like, her friends and her friend and her boyfriend and shit, trying to find her. Then he goes to the Technoir.
Slasher film scene. Yeah,
for sure. And finds her down there because of the answering machine. And that sequence is probably in, like, the top 10 action sequences of all time. Like, that whole thing, from the time that he got... The way that that's filmed is so perfect, man. So he walks in, and it's, like, in slow motion, if you remember, too. And it's, like, she's sitting there waiting on the... I think she calls the cops or something like that.
They're supposed to come and get her, yeah.
Yeah, and she's sitting there waiting, and he comes in, and he's, like, scanning her. And then everybody parts, and they're dancing, and then everything parts. And, you know, you see her at the exact same time the Terminator sees her. He pulls up the, you know, the... Red dot, puts it on her, and then Reese comes up. It's just that whole thing is fucking killer. Then blows him out the front window and all that. It's just the perfect example of, like, there's the 80s with that club. There's the action sequence, the sci-fi elements of it.
And then I think it's one of those movies, too, that instantly sets the mood within the first 10, 15 minutes, and really, like, the dialogue in probably the first half of the movie, I would say all of the dialogue in up to the first half is, like, maybe a page. Like, it's all visual pretty much, right? There's not a whole lot of, like, you just kind of see what's going on and the chaos and everything. And then there towards the end of the movie, too, where the Terminator just, he will not stop. He's never going to stop. He's like fucking... Rob Zombie, right?
Yeah, he's a lot better than that, but never gonna stop. Yeah.
And then
let me ask you a question, though.
Yeah.
Because I was curious about this. I'm sure there was, but I just could not think of it or could not, like, place it. But is there another movie that did the whole, like, robot scanning thing like that before Terminator? You know how, like, you see from his perspective and there's all that, like, data that's going on the screen, and then he's, like, scanning objects and it tells you what the object is and all that shit's going on at the same. Was there a movie that did that before
Terminator? Not that I'm aware of. I mean, this was 84. I mean, I think that they used elements from Halloween, like the first person, and changed it enough to where, hey, this is like a almost like a monitor. You're looking through a monitor and you're seeing what the computer system sees. And something else, man, that I don't think that anybody had ever seen before is, you know, the T-800, the endoskeleton and how detailed that was for that time period and have a good way of moving it around. I mean, they did a lot of stop motion there, moving the skeleton around everything, but what a kick-ass fucking design for, I mean, Stan Winston, one of the very best of all time, created that. It's a beautiful design still to this day. They've used it in all those stupid shit ass sequels, right? And most of the time now they're like all CGI'd and just really over the top stupid bullshit. But for 1984, it's a fantastic, like, you know, I don't know if, you know, I know Stan Winston did some pretty amazing creature effects and makeup effects and everything, but this has got to be right up there at the very top. Some of the best stuff that he
I mean, did. It's that and Predator, right? Like, between the designs that guy did, those are the two. Those are the two ones that like stick out in my mind.
Well, and something else that I wanted to mention on here too is the ending of the movie and how clearly he had a sequel planned, even in 1984, without knowing what this movie would do. Right, because let's go back there to 1984. Who was associated with this movie that would guarantee it would have been a hit?
Well, Gail Hurd is the only other person really associated with the making of it in terms of like production, being a producer. She was associated with Roger Corman, but I don't know if Roger Corman had anything to do with it. You know what I mean? Like, he may have, because they had that connection with Cameron at the time.
So, I mean, to me, though, that just tells me that he was confident enough in the project to say, hey, this is going to be a gigantic hit, and we're going to leave it open for that sequel. And what's interesting is you kind of already get the vibe of Terminator 2, you know, when they're out there in the desert roads and everything, and at the end of the first movie, and that was, what, a good 7 years or so before that movie came out.
Yeah.
So,
let's see. Yeah, it's Weston Warren. This is very true. He says, it was the first time we saw a robot pick fuck you asshole for a response.
Fuck you asshole.
He goes, something like, hey, buddy, you got a dead cat in there or what? It shows like the possible responses. And one of them's, fuck you asshole.
Yeah. There you go.
But there's so many classic scenes in that movie, man. I don't even know where to begin. There's the scene with the chase scene. There's the fucking bridge scene. There's the scene in the gun store, which is my personal favorite scene because Dick Miller, who, by the way, that has to be the Roger Corman Association, that he's even in that movie. It's got to be.
Dick Miller was in a lot of stuff around this time period, though, too. Yeah. Like, anybody that was associated with Corman, I think they just love Dick Miller. Like, he's probably got one of the best reputations, being the most friendly, humble. You know, everyone loved him, from what I've heard. So I would say that's why. Like, you know, Cameron probably knew him and talked to him and all that. And same thing happened with Joe Dante too. Like, a lot of the movies that Joe Dante did around the same time period, he employed, you know, he had Dick Miller in some character roles.
Yeah. Then there's the police station scene, too, which I forgot about, which is a great scene. Lance Henriksen's in there. Him going through that police station and just killing it. That was really when I watched that as a kid and everything, that was the first time you feel really kind of uneasy, because it becomes clear at that point that, like, you can't really stop the guy or the thing. It's got a whole police station of people, and he just goes through them. Then you know there's no chance, like, that they're going to stop him, like two people or anything like that. So he's really like, he becomes really like a force in that scene that you know is kind of indestructible. And then going through it, people don't give Michael Biehn enough credit for the fact of like how he played that role, because he has to give all this exposition. He's got to tell everybody, like, you know, where the Terminator comes from, about the war. He's got to do all of that background stuff. And he's also got to deliver like a lot of passion. And there's that scene where he's like, you know, he's talking to her and she doesn't believe him, and she tries to bite him on the hand and shit, and he's like, I feel pain, but the Terminator doesn't feel pain, and blah 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 blah, he will not stop until you're fucking dead, and all this stuff. And that whole scene's great too. That just adds to the kind of like mythology of the story. So I think he should get a lot of credit for that role.
And also towards the end of, you know, I guess the unveil of the endoskeleton by itself is whenever the Terminator falls down into like the fire, and you can almost see that flesh like melting off, and then here pops up this fuck.
Yeah,
I could imagine that in a theater back then, the reaction from the crowd. And you really, it's a shame because, like, everybody's seen everything at this point, and there's really nothing that anybody could do that would get any sort of reaction like that in a movie now, and that's really unfortunate. But I always love that scene, too, where it's, you know, it's primarily just the machine after him at that point.
Yeah, and even at the end where he, like, kind of gets, like, just he's just a torso, but the, like, crawling, trying to get to her. It's just like never stops. It just like gives a really good representation that no matter what happens to it, it won't stop until it completes its mission. What did you think about Linda Hamilton in this movie? Looking back.
I mean, she did fine. I thought she did fine in it. And it's funny because like, I wonder how that, I guess I could look this up, how they got her for this role. So the same year she did Children of the Corn as well.
Mm-hmm.
So she was doing like lower budget movies at this point and really never went on to do a whole lot else. I mean, I'm sure she did some smaller roles in bigger budget movies and stuff like that, but nothing of any significance after this first Terminator movie. And they got her back for the second one. But, I mean, she was okay. I don't think there was anything like, you know, I don't think that they had to get her for that role. What about you?
You mean, was there something about her that was special or something?
Right. That like, oh, she's the only one that could have played that character.
No, not at that time. No. What's weird is that like, to me, she's much better in Terminator 2. In this movie, she has an arc though. I mean, she goes from being like a basket case in the beginning and just kind of being like a deer in headlights to at the end, she's carrying him and shit. You remember when he like, when Reese gets injured and she has to pick him up and she's like, you know, come on, soldier and all this shit, get up. And she's like trying to like carry him through the factory or whatever. So she does have a really good, I think it's just, it takes, Terminator 2 takes that part of the character and makes it like the main focus to where she's like much more well prepared than anybody else in the movie or any other guy or anything in the movie. So right. I just think her role in that's kind of iconic now. It's like Sigourney Weaver or something in Alien. It's the same kind of level.
No.
But yeah, in the first one, she was, you could have interchanged her, I think. With
Let me ask you this though. Had there never been a Terminator 2, had this been a one-off, do you think people would still be talking about this movie?
Yeah. Yeah, I do actually. Now, do you mean like if Cameron had gone on and just like skipped Terminator 2 and just done like all the rest of the movies?
All the other
done?
Stuff and was like, yeah, no, we're not going to do a Terminator. No
yeah,
Terminator
I think people movie. Would still go back to this movie and be like, this was huge for Schwarzenegger and this was huge because of like, it was like iconic. That fucking Terminator alone, the look of that would have been iconic no matter what.
Oh, if you really look at Terminator 2, and it's been a while since I've seen Terminator 2, and that's one of my favorites, man, for sure. Saw it in a theater. I marked out. I mean, that's like the ultimate, in my opinion, summer blockbuster movie.
It back is, in the yeah. Day. For us, for our generation, definitely, yeah.
Essentially, though, Terminator 2 was a big budget remake of the Terminator, kind of. Like, it's the same idea, really. I mean, they changed a few things in the story. And made it a sequel, of course, but it's essentially exactly the same.
Well, the big thing that I think is forgotten now because that movie's so commonplace is that like everybody thought at the time that movie came out, before it came out, that Schwarzenegger would be the bad guy. And they completely like turned that around and made him. That's kind of become a cliche now, so many different movies.
He was reprogrammed, boys, like yeah. Megan.
Yeah, Megan was that's what I mean. Like movies just rip that shit off now. Like that's happened a bunch of times.
Yeah.
But yeah, and so when you first see him in T2 and you think he's going to shoot John Connor because that would be the thing that he would do, and then Robert Patrick comes up, which, by the way, Robert Patrick is outstanding in that role, too. We don't really talk about T2 enough, but that movie is crazily good. if crazily is a word.
Crazy.
That movie. Yeah. I mean, I love the Terminator, but fuck, man, that movie kind of like Terminator 2 was. It was like our generation's like biggest action film.
It was the big thing. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was massive, massive success. And all was good in the Terminator universe for about, what, 11 or 12 years. And then here they go, boys. Here they go.
Well, Terminator 3, at least they use mostly practical stuff. They're starting to get into, like, dabbling into CG and stuff. But, like, once you get past Terminator 3, it's just fucking just shit house.
Well, like, I don't think we need Terminator 3 either. It'd been fine in and in it, too.
Yeah, but, I mean, after that, though, when you get to Terminator Salvation and, like, Terminator Fuckation or whatever all those other sequels were, like, they're all just awful messes of films.
So, yeah, I mean, Terminator, though, the original, all-time classic, definitely horror vibes throughout. I mean, technically, it is a slasher movie, really. But there's a lot of other things going on in it that I think Brad Fidel's score is fantastic. It helps the movie and gives it a much larger feel. It makes it feel like a big-budget movie. And the Stan Winston makeup effects, man, without that, you know, and even parts of it are dated for sure. Like, you know, I mean, I'd be lying if I said they wasn't. But without that, for that time period, they couldn't have made it. They couldn't have done the movie.
That's exactly true. I'm looking at this, though, I mean, just looking at, like, some information about the movie. I never knew this, but, like, you want to hear some people that were before Linda Hamilton that were considered for the role of Sarah Connor?
Sure.
That actually, like, they picked before, but a lot of them didn't want to do it. Jennifer Jason Leigh, that totally makes sense to me. I think that would have actually worked.
That would have worked, I believe, yeah.
Melissa Sue Anderson. I don't know about that.
No.
And Jessica Harper. Think about Terminator with Jessica Harper from Suspiria in it.
That would have been interesting. I actually, like, Jennifer Jason Leigh, I think, would have been pretty cool to see how that would have worked. I think she would have been the best fit of those three.
Leah Thompson also auditioned for that role, too. I cannot fucking imagine Leah Thompson in that role.
She's too sweet.
Yeah.
She couldn't be a badass character, I don't think.
I can't see that either for some reason.
But, yeah, I was looking at the poll here. We are asking you guys which is the better slash film, The Terminator, which we've been talking about, or The First Power from 1990. It is 85% Terminator, 15% First Power. We got 87 votes in. Are you surprised by that at all, Uncle Bill?
No. This is going to be the most lopsided one, man, just because of what these two movies are, yeah.
So I guess we'll go ahead and get rolling in The First Power, because this is one that you kind of champion quite a bit, right?
Yeah, me and Rambo and Mark, we all love this movie. We actually did like a watch along for the movie. And I've liked it since I was a teenager, man. But not a lot of people seem to know about it. But The First Power is the story. And the more I started thinking about it, the more I began to realize that The First Power is basically a ripoff of Cobra. Not in terms of storyline per se, but kind of, because it's the same type of cult kind of thing. It's got the same type of killer in it, same type of basic, you know, plot with the cop chasing the killer who's part of a cult, who's the slasher, and yada yada yada. So I think they were trying to capitalize on that movie, and this was a couple of years after Cobra came out, probably like 3 years, something like that. But anyway, this is the story of Lou Diamond Phillips, who plays a cop by the name of Russell Logan, who specializes in catching serial killers. And he's hunting this guy called the Pentagram Killer, who, that sounds like something out of the 80s for sure, who carves pentagrams into people that he's already killed. So oddly enough, he catches him in the first part of the movie. that plays the Pentagram Killer is infinitely more creepy to me than Brian Thompson, who's the guy that plays the killer in Cobra. And
Jeff Cobra.
Jeff Cobra, yeah. He's in The Walking Dead. A lot of people remember him from a scene in that in particular. But, like, he catches him, and he gets him tried and executed. When he's executed, it actually gets worse because he's brought back by Satan.
And he is warned by Sylvia Brown, Psyche, in this, yeah, to not let him be put to death, which is hilarious because, yeah, at some point he's going to fucking die anyway.
Right. What would it matter? So when I was curious about that too. Like, if he dies of natural causes, does that mean the same thing happens or somebody, yeah, has to kill him? I don't know. But anyway, so yeah. So once they kill him, it makes everything worse because now he starts to inhabit other people's bodies and stuff like that. And Lou Diamond Phillips starts to have all these weird visions and premonitions and scenes and in his mind, and he hears voices in his head like Randy Orton. And he is joined by the help of Tracy Griffith, who plays this psychic called Tess.
Who's, I thought her name was Sylvia Brown.
It is Sylvia Brown too.
Oh, okay.
And a nun who goes by the name of Nunnery. Nunya Brown. And from that point, it's just a cat and mouse kind of thing to try to catch this reincarnated supernatural killer.
They don't really explain that very well, at least in my opinion. Because, like, okay, so he's reincarnating himself into these, like, he's
like Jason, man, from fucking Jason Goes to Hell, except without the heart eating.
He shows up randomly as Jeff Cobra as well.
Well, there's something that she says in there where she's like, that's what he wants you to see. And telling you that it's not really him, but, like, he can mess with your mind and make you see that it's him, even though it's somebody else. And all through the movie, I mean, Lou Diamond Phillips is having all these, like, hallucinations and shit like that, thinking that things are happening and aren't happening.
I guess he made this in between Young Guns 2, because this was, like, right at the same time Young Guns 2 came out. And Lou Diamond Phillips was doing, like, all kinds of, and I don't know what the big budget was with this. I don't know if it had a big budget, really. But, this almost comes across as one of those, like, direct-to-video movies. So, I mean, people in the chat let us know, or I don't know if Uncle Bill knows. Was this actually out in a movie theater, or was this more or less just a direct-to-video movie?
So, the budget was $10 million. I do know that. And I know it was released by Orion Pictures, and I think it came out in theaters. I can actually look on here. So, yeah, it doesn't say, of course.
Ken Carlson says he saw it in the theaters in 1990.
Yeah.
I just wonder how wide of a release. Like, it, I mean, I could be totally wrong on this, but it just doesn't seem like a big, like, Hollywood movie.
It did make, like, $23 million on a $10 million. So, it wasn't like a, wasn't a bomb or anything. It just didn't, it was kind of average.
What do you think about the name of the movie? Justin Smith saying it's a shitty name for a movie.
I think it's a fine, I mean, I don't see a problem with the name. It's definitely memorable anyway. Mm. So I always liked it because mostly Jeff Cobra. Lou Diamond Phillips is there. He's, I guess, doing his best. Tracy Griffith is fine, but, like, Jeff Cobra is really, like, the star of the show.
There was a scene, too, that was kind of goofy. It was almost like something from, like, a fucking Evil Dead movie or something where, was it like a possessed, like, bum?
It's a bum. Yeah, that's like a scene from Scrooged or something. That scene always sticks out to me because it's simultaneously hilarious and fucking terrifying at the same time. So, like, out of nowhere, this bum, like, they're in, like, a skyscraper or something, like, floats up and starts doing spins and shit, and, like, yeah. Then she kind of attacks him, and she knows, like, karate or something too. She's done all these moves and shit to him. But that scene is fucking hilariously bad.
Just sticks out like a sore thumb too, because it's like, it's almost like slapstick is what that scene is. Like, it something is, from like an Evil Dead. I thought like Army of Darkness or Evil Dead 2 or something like that. But I didn't really.
There's a scene at the end too with the nun when she gets possessed. It's kind of goofy too. Like yeah. some of the
everybody gets possessed in this. Yeah. Pretty much.
Some of the possession stuff's a little bit silly.
Tracy Griffith in this, who plays Sylvia Brown, she is actually Melanie's younger sister. And good Lord, man, very, very attractive lady. I don't know if she did a whole lot of extra stuff around this time period, but
she did Sleepaway Camp 3.
Oh, wow. So Sleepaway Camp 3 and The First Power. So I don't know how, you know, how good her career went after that, but I thought she was fine in this. She was great to look at. Lou Diamond Phillips, I always like him in anything that he's in. I think he's a great actor, underrated. But I didn't really get into this movie, man. I just didn't. I tried. If I had seen this before, I'd totally forgot about everything in it. I thought it was a little bit slow. And I didn't really understand the possession and Jeff Kober and how all that worked. Like they didn't explain it enough for a simple Kentucky man to check, you know, to understand it.
Yeah, I don't know. I always kind of like the action sequences in it, especially the scene, which I've never really seen anything like this. But there's a scene towards the end where, and the mask that he wears in this is super fucking creepy too.
It's like
Ronald Reagan looking almost kind of mask, but different. And he's wearing it and he's coming after Lou Diamond Phillips. And this is after he's already dead. And he just rips down like a ceiling fan, turns it forward, and it just comes on like a blade, like a propeller or something like that.
I mean, why not? It's a dead man coming after you. So go for it.
And he fucking like tries to kill him with it. I always love that scene because it's just, it's so crazy.
Now, Kino Lorber did come out with this on Blu-ray here in the U.S., but it is out of print, and I think it's going for, you know, pretty high dollar. If you want, I think 88 Films over in the U.K. has it out, and there may be a U.S. DVD that you can get still.
But I don't know if this is still in print, but this is the version that I've got from 88 Films.
Yeah.
It's a region.
I think
B,
that
though.
One's still in print.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you've got a region free player, you can get it. Dude, like,
brother,
I think it's a good supernatural, like, action movie. To me, it's a slasher film because the killer in it's very similar to, like I said, Cobra. And Cobra is kind of a slasher film too. They're both, the villains in both of those are essentially like what would be slasher movie villains. It's just that the difference is there's a cop chasing them, and that kind of makes it an action film rather than like them just, you know, like having a final girl or something like that.
We do appreciate everybody in the chat and everything. We got 120 people checking us out. We got some super chats. Carl with a K. $5 UK super chat. How do you guys think the film would have been received? He's talking about Terminator and remembered with Lance Henriksen in the title role instead of Schwarzenegger.
It's weird because I can't see anybody in that movie except Schwarzenegger now.
I'm the same way. Matthew Hara is in here. We get to you, Matthew, if you're just now getting in here, buddy. I got something for you. Keep up the great content, as always. Our buddy Anthony from Let's Talk Resident Evil. Bulls.
What in the hell is Tony been up to these days, man?
Oh, no. He needs to not be such a stranger. All right, Matthew, you wanted some Cropsy? Fuck Cropsy.
We made that shirt just for you.
And you can get your own shirt on shop.deadpit.com right now. It just came out. It's pretty huge.
Thank you, sir. Right. I forgot about that. OJ was considered as the Terminator. How fucking weird would that have been?
Well, I think Henriksen was cast already as the Terminator or something, right? And then they got Arnold last minute.
I honestly don't know the story behind that, but just imagine nowadays though, if like OJ had been the Terminator, that movie would
Yeah, they couldn't, you couldn't talk about that movie now.
No. It's like talking about Chris Benoit's entire WWE career.
They wouldn't have remastered it at all. It probably wouldn't have had a release past the name.
It probably wouldn't have been worth a shit anyway, though, honestly.
Does Princess Puffins consider it a slasher movie, Uncle Bill?
Yes. She's very progressive in her views.
As far as the Dark Power being a slasher movie, like...
The first power? Dark Power.
Dark Power. First Power.
Dark Half.
Second Power. That would be the sequel. As far as the first power being a slasher movie, though, man, like, I don't know. Like, I guess there's a couple of scenes in it that could be considered slasher, but it's more or less like a possession movie more than anything for me.
It is that, but, like, the way that everybody's killed in the movie is basically...
Violently!
With a knife. And they're
slashed. Jeff Cobra, creepy-looking motherfucker.
What's that he says?
The juice is loose and looking for Falcon.
Yeah, but anybody that hasn't seen that movie, and if you like low budget action films with kind of like horror elements from late 80s, early 90s, that I would recommend that film, The First Power.
So kicking back to the poll, which is the better slasher film? The Terminator won with 88%. It's a landslide. It's kicked the shit out of the first power and the dark power and the second power.
I'm honestly surprised the first power got any votes. that's the more surprising thing.
They got a total of 105 votes on there right now. So 88% is 12%. I mean, it's kind of a, definitely neither of these are considered slasher movies, but people do bring them up from time to time. And we thought it'd be fun to kind of mix it up a little bit for at least 1 week. But for next week, Uncle Bill, we're going somewhere that many people would dread to go. But I'm excited about it because next week is the Shot on Video Slasher Week. And we are taking a look. We'll show it up here, Wolves. After much consideration, we are going to watch and review Heavy Metal Massacre.
With Bobby Young.
With Bobby Young. Our good buddy, Damon Dave. It's his alter ego, Bobby Young. Right?
Uh-huh.
And the other one is Blood Lake. I think this one's from 1987, 88, something like that. Directed by Tim Boggs. So that will be an interesting one. Shot on Video slasher movies all the way live next week. And next week, it's going to be Saturday night, Uncle Bill. Saturday night at 10 p.m. Because SummerSlam is Saturday night and Sunday night.
Oh, God. Who gives a fuck? Like, it's going to be on there. It's recorded.
That's true. I'm going to watch it on Saturday night and Sunday night. That's what I'm saying. So I think we're going to do one post show on Sunday night and then the slash back on Saturday night at 10. So get you guys ready for that. So what else?
Everybody seems pretty excited though about the Shot on Video episode. I don't know why.
The Shot on Video episode is going to be a lot of fun, man. Heavy Metal Massacre. It took my baby away from me.
Dude, like, I legitimately had no idea that was a dude on that cover, or B, that was Demon Day. I would have never, in a million years, if you were like, who is that on the cover of that, would have guessed that was him.
I didn't know. I legit thought it was a woman. You know.
So, yeah. I mean, I'm super excited to see what his acting skills are like.
Bobby Young is a heavy metal mom. He is. some other stuff we've got planned. Hopefully, I think on Thursday, we're going to do a test run on this auction thing that we've been talking about with Garrett. I think that's the plan. So I'm going to get a couple of items. I'm just going to test out how this works. Horror memorabilia. And we'll have to come up with how in the fuck we're going to do this. But
I don't know either.
We're going to try. It's the Rad Pit Auction House debuts this Thursday at 10. So if anybody's looking to purchase some horror memorabilia DVDs, posters. I don't.
Everything must go.
Everything must go. And this is kind of a trial run. So I think me and Uncle Bill just by ourselves probably have enough shit to sell for the next 5 or 6 years if we wanted to. So that's coming. What else is going on? Friday Night Lives returns.
Yep. We still don't know what the fuck we're doing with that, but hopefully nobody else dies.
Yeah, so. We got some patron requests we need to do. There's another commentary that Heather requested for Dude Bro Massacre 3. I haven't seen the first two, so I don't really know what we're in for with Dude Bro Massacre 3. That was requested from our good friend Heather. And there's the Tears for Fears album we're supposed to review, Uncle Bill. That'll be fun. Everybody wants to rule the world.
No.
I've never reviewed an album before, so that'll be interesting.
That should be fun.
Some more stuff. The Wailing, I think, is the other one, the movie. I don't know what that is, but I guess we'll look it up.
Is that about like killing whales, or is that about like crying and shit?
I don't know. I think it's spelled Wailing. The Wailing.
So it's more like wailing around, like, oh God.
Scratches already hopping up Blood Lake and Little Tony in Blood Lake. So we'll see.
All right.
I've heard a lot of people talk about Blood Lake. I've never seen it. I've got it back here somewhere.
What's it on? I mean, is like.
I think it's on Tubi, but there's a DVD of it that Agfa did, which I do remember that cover from back in the VHS days, it seems like, but I don't know if I ever saw it. So, Agfa.
Is that still available, or is that already sold out?
I don't know if it's still available or not. But I think it's online. You can, like, I think Tubi has both of these movies.
Yeah, the problem with Tubi is, though, that shit oftentimes looks like ass.
I think YouTube has the Heavy Metal Massacre.
Yeah, that's the only way I'm ever going to see that. I know they ain't going to find that on nothing.
Somebody already made a DVD of it, though, I think.
Who? Had to be him.
I don't know. I don't remember which company had it, but.
Oh, shit.
Anyway. That'll be a fun double feature, though, man. Blood Lake is on Tubi, yep. And it's on YouTube. Okay. So it's on YouTube as well.
So you don't have any excuse. You can watch these movies on YouTube, both of them, right now.
Yeah. All right, guys. But I guess that is it. Anything else you had to mention on here, Uncle Bill?
Yeah, one thing. Idle.
I just want to remind everybody out there to stay positive and leave the negativity in the dirt. Tell negativity to go do a backflip into its own shit and finger fuck its papaw.
Get out of here, negativity. We hate you.
We hate negativity. We hate it. Oh. We'll catch you guys next time. Deadpit.com.
Stay positive, assholes.
I want all these people to click everything they're supposed to click.
You haven't been liking them, you haven't been subscribing to them, you haven't clicked the bell or notification or anything like that.
Folks, why don't you click the like button?
You hate us? Do you not want to see us succeed?
Why don't you click the heart button?
Is this something that you have against our particular show?
Why don't you subscribe?
You should click on one of them buttons right now if you want us to continue to breathe greatness into your life.
There's all kinds of wonderful shirts over at shop.deadpits.com. Simply the best horror shirts on TeePublic. There are others, but they all suck. You can get some Dead Pit Radio shirts. You can get Last South on the left, The Hills Have Eyes, Texas Chainsaw. Oh, wait, you can't say Texas Chainsaw. All kinds of shirts, folks. You're going to love them. shop.deadpit.com.
Special thanks goes out to our supporters on Patreon. You know what kind of stuff you can get on Patreon, Uncle Bill, starting at only $1 a month?
What's that?
Access to every Dead Pit show since 2005. We got almost 200 fan commentaries that we've done over the decade.
Here's what other fucking Patreons do. They're like, hey, give us money and then we'll let you see a video early that we're going to release like a fucking week from now. And then that's all we're going to give you. Meanwhile, we have a literal jukebox full of songs, thousands of reviews. I don't even know how many shows are up on that now that we've done over the years.
Hundreds of thousands.
You need to figure this out now and subscribe to us on Patreon and YouTube and Instagram. Help us to 1 million. The road to 1 million subscribers starts today.
So DeadPit on Patreon.com. Join today. Tiers start at only $1, but I'd recommend at least the $10 tier.
You can do 50. The stock market's crashing around us, folks, but send us money.